Diese Folge ist auf Englisch aufgenommen, da unser Gast englischsprachig ist. Welcome to Nicht im Fachraum Essen, the podcast where we give you insights into exciting projects by young scientists on teaching and learning chemistry and physics. My name is Ann-Kathrin Krebs and I'm pleased to have you here today. In today's episode, we speak with Professor David Tregust from Curtin University, Western Australia, a very special guest. In 2024, he received a GDCP Medal of Honor, which is awarded annually for long-standing, outstanding achievements in the didactics of chemistry and physics. The medal recognizes individuals who have made substantial contributions to the advancement of chemistry or physics education and to research and development in these areas. In this episode, Professor Tregust shares some advice for early career researchers on how to thrive in science education and establish international collaborations. He also shares his impressions of what characterizes science education research in German-speaking countries. The interview with Professor Tregust took place at the GDCP Conference 2025 in Frankfurt am Main in Germany. Dear David, it's so nice to have you today for our podcast, Nicht im Fachraum Essen, and to talk to you about science and research in the future. Last year you received the honorary medal of didactics in chemistry and physics, and for outstanding and long-standing research and contribution to the society. And therefore we want to know a little bit more about yourself, and please introduce yourself.
Okay. I see myself as a teacher. I started my career as a science teacher. I taught in England, I taught in Tasmania, and then I decided I needed more education. So I went to the US, I completed a master's and a doctoral degree, and then I did a postdoc. And part of this time, my thinking evolved from going back to the classroom to working in a university. Mm-hmm. So an opportunity came for me to return to Australia and start my career as a lecturer in this university, Curtin University, and then I, through the years, got promoted. There are four levels: lecturer, senior lecturer, associate professor, and then professor. And I've been professor for a number of years, so I stopped being full-time about 14 years ago, but I'm part-time, and the part-time is often related to grants. Mm-hmm. So the money doesn't pay the grant. The grant doesn't pay my fee, my salary, but the university needs to support me to carry out the research. Mm-hmm. So I've been very fortunate.
Great. And during your career, you had a lot of opportunities to help young researchers for their future careers and for their future science.
Yeah.
And what is your advice for upcoming researchers on how to thrive in science education?
I think you need to be passionate about what you want to do. Mm-hmm. If you're passionate, you can work hard and not feel under stress, but at some stage in a doctoral degree or even later, there are times when you feel very stressed because there's deadline and you have to do this and you've got personal situations to deal with. But this is just normal life as I see it. You need to share what you're doing with other people, and that those other people can be the research group or a broader research group. I don't know what happens in Germany, but in Australia we have like local conferences with researchers, local conferences with teachers. And for me, I've always participated. I want to share what I know and find out what the teachers are doing, and so I get these connections between university and schools, because it's not always easy. I think the research that I am involved in always involves some aspect of practice. Mm-hmm. So research that people conduct throughout the world will recommend something, and I will then work with teachers about, for example, with a colleague, Mihai Won. She's now moved to Monash from Curtin. Monash is in Melbourne. She and I had an Australian Research Council grant dealing with creativity. Mm-hmm. And now I'm still working with one student, and she also, dealing with creativity in the classroom. So how do you bring creativity in the classroom?
That's a good question.
The Australian Curriculum Authority recommend it, but they don't give any guidance to it.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore the guidance has got to come from outside this document, and this is what we've been doing. So the teachers are putting this into practice. Mm-hmm. It's pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Kids really get excited. The problem is, I'm not quite up to date with the curriculum that I need to be following because it takes more time. And you know, so this is a balance that teachers have to engage in when they participate in research.
Mm-hmm.
Another point about advice for coming researchers for me is to think about the research and where you can present it and publish it.
Mm-hmm.
And what I often do is try to get these ideas out at the beginning, not at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not always easy, so the student or the young researcher needs a lot of advice. And I talked to a young guy here yesterday, and he was asking me that question about how do you publish? I said, well, you got to figure out what needs to go in a teacher's journal, what needs to go in a research journal.
And so you have to know your audience.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And I mean, many people write a dissertation or a thesis, whatever you call it, and don't produce any small pieces of research that goes in a journal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good product, but nobody knows about it other than the university and the supervisor.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. So I think you need to look outside. And the thing that's always so impressive with me is the German students' capacity for English language. I mean, it's just exceptional.
That's great.
Yeah.
Perfect. Now, we are right now at Frankfurt at the GDCP 2025.
Yep.
And what do you think is specific about German-speaking science education research?
Okay, to answer this question, I'm going to come back to my first working in German universities, which began and continued for 3 decades with Professor Reinders-Durrett at the IPN, University of Kiel. So he and I met because I wanted to find out what was going on in German science education. My wife is German, so that was part of the interest. So I went to University of Kiel because there was a research there. I'd written 2 textbooks, primary science and secondary science, about solar energy.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the University of Kiel, introduced myself to the head, and he said, oh, energy, you should talk to Reinders-Durrett. He's writing a habilitation on the energy concept. So we met. He spoke excellent English. I spoke no German at the time, and I don't speak very good German anyway. And we have a common interest in conceptual change, so we have a lot of publications in conceptual change. To answer your question, the thing that was so different about Reinders' orientation and mine, whatever he was doing was very theoretically informed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a German tradition that's much stronger than the Anglo-Saxons.
Mm-hmm.
And the mirror image of that is my orientation is for practice. But maybe it's practice that's like not well informed.
Mm-hmm.
So between the two of us, he being theoretically informed and interested in practice, and me having some interest in theory but a lot of interest in practice, we were a very good balance.
It was a match.
Yeah, yes. And I see this again with other people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I worked with other German colleagues and I find the same balance. So I think what is very, very different about German speaking science education, I think the first point is to be theoretically informed before you progress with the work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very useful for other people to know. Germans work with colleagues all over the world, and I think that is a good influence, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. So we should work more together, get the benefits from all our perspectives.
Yes.
And our strengths.
I think so. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. No doubt about it. I mean, I'm not saying that the German tradition is not geared towards practice. It mm-hmm. clearly is, but it's more theoretically informed, in my estimation, than the Australian, for
mm-hmm.
example.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you met a lot of young researchers here around, and there are a lot of PhD students or master students who are presenting their scientific work and who are interested in probably an international collaboration.
Yeah.
So do you have any tips for these young researchers wanting to start their first international collaboration?
You know, it's not so easy because you need an introduction. The best way this, I think, was ever done in my experience was through Hans Fischer and Elke Zumpflath at the University of Duisburg, Essen. They had this project or projects, and what they did was encouraged researchers in their program to spend 3 months overseas. So because I know Hans and Elke, several of those students came to Germany, from Germany came to Australia, they went to the US, I think some went to the Netherlands, but the point is they went overseas. So that was a connection that was made by the professor for the student.
That's great.
And many of those students who came to me, I've kept in contact with and published with some of them. So, I mean, that's how it all begins, I think. So no young person's come up to me and said, do you have any opportunities for visiting students? I mean, you kind of to be very bold to do that. But before I came here, a colleague from, she's from University of Paderborn, and she said a PhD student has just finished. He'd like some international experience. He has the funds. Would you be his host for 3 months? And I've written back and said, yes, let's have a look at some papers that he can write, which would involve the former supervisor, the student, who would be the first author, a colleague of mine at work at Curtin, who works in the same area that he is, because I'm not working in that area, that involves AI, and me. So the student needs a connection. And the connection is often through professors.
So do you recommend that the professors who are supervisors right now for their PhD students or for their master's students are a little bit more bolder to ask around? Or should the students do this?
I mean, this work that I mentioned with Hans Fischer started almost 20 years ago.
Okay, so this is very established.
And it's a good model. And I know other people have got a similar model. In fact, other colleagues in German universities followed this model and said, I have this student, she's doing A, B, and C, or can you host her for 3 months? And the answer was yes. And one of the students, she was not a doctoral student, she was a master's student, but wanted to spend time in a school, like as observing classes. So I got some forms filled out and signed by the appropriate people. So she spent a lot of time in school, not at the university. These things are possible by having international conferences. This one to some extent, but more ECERA, for example, European Science Education Research Association. I think there were 60 nationalities. So you want to go to Chile? There were many people in Chile there, so talk to them. And if you're looking for funding, that's always going to be difficult. But when someone says this person has Deutsche Forschungsgemeinschaft funds, then the answer is going to be yes. But I'm not the person to make the decision. Head of department needs to make the decision and find a place for them to work and what's going to be the benefit and all this kind of thing.
So we have a little bit to be a little bit more bolder, a little bit more courageous.
But it's happened already, so so there are models in place.
They are already there. So just go for it.
And I mean, people like international visitors here, so the professors are connected with those colleagues and then involve the young students and the doctoral students. Because of my connection with Reinders Do It, who passed away, I think, 3 years ago, I still visit the IPN. And often meet with younger people, and I go out to lunch with them. And so, in a way, nothing useful happens out of that. But they made a connection with me, and maybe they want to write to me and say, do you know anything about this? And
So the beginning of a network.
Yeah, yeah. And people write to me quite often, and I meet them here. I met someone yesterday. Do you remember me 6 years ago? I wrote to you about, can you give this information? The answer is yes. So we translated it into Swiss and changed it around, but that was the start of this study. So, yeah. This used to happen in the mail, right? Before the internet, I get a letter in the mail. Yeah. You wouldn't know anything about this.
I'm not that young.
No, no. can you send me a copy of your journal article? When you had a journal article sent, the publisher would give you 25 copies. And then you distribute them to your friends. And if it's a really very interesting topic for other people, you would buy another 25 copies, put them in the mail, stamp on them, go to the post office. So, it seems like 100 years ago, doesn't it?
Yeah, so that's right. And now it's just an email.
Yeah, I know.
With the PDF.
Oh, yes.
Okay, great. Yeah. Thank you.
Can I mention one other thing?
Yes, of course.
You mentioned about tips for young researchers. Yes. I think attend international conferences. GDCP is a local conference, but I think also try and attend international ones. Yeah. And in Europe is probably quite easy because you can. Well, I went to Denmark by bus. Cost me 35 euros or something. So I mean, that's with anyone's cost. But the hotel. Did you go to Isera?
No, I wasn't. But I was this year at Narst.
Right.
And the flight was pretty long.
Yes, I know. I think the other thing is to, if you ask, agree to review for journals. And what I've done in the past, because I'm no longer teaching classes, I would like train, if we want to use that word, students to review. So we'd have a paper, it's published paper, or it might be something that I am writing but doesn't involve these students, and review it, pull it apart. And so I train people to be reviewers.
Yeah.
And then when the opportunity comes to be a reviewer, you get invited to review journals and you build up your credibility. And if you're looking for promotion, you need to, have these international networks, and part of the international networks would be for a reviewer for International Journal of Science Education. I reviewed 2 papers last year, 3 the year before. So
be active in science.
Activity is the main thing. None of us have the time to do everything we want to do, so that this is...
You have to distribute your time.
Managing time is a real great skill, I think.
Yeah, something.
Life skill.
Yeah, it's a life skill. That's real,
I mean, I know students with, doctoral students with children, a husband who works, and how do you manage this?
Yes.
Oh, well, I start at 11 o'clock at night and write the chapter. Anyway.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Anne-Catherine.
Do you want to make a last take-home message for our listeners?
Oh. Enjoy what you're doing. Be active. Be willing to engage in whatever comes your way. But be careful not to overdo everything. Otherwise, you don't accomplish anything.
That is also a great take-home message and a great advice.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to have you today.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you for your time.
That was today's episode of Nicht im Fachraum Essen, the podcast about research and learning and teaching chemistry and physics. We would like to express our sincere thanks to the GDCP Foundation for the promotion of young scientists in chemistry and physics education, whose support made it possible for you to listen to this podcast. Further information on Nicht im Fachraum Essen, other episodes and the podcast team are available on our website. Thank you for listening and see you next time.